Smart Target from Shaw Business helps you launch personalized marketing campaigns so you can keep your customers coming back for more. Like Jake here.
Hi.
Let's say Jake likes colorful socks.
I do.
And you just got some excessively neon numbers in stock. So, Smart Target sends an offer to Jake.
Ooh.
And anyone else who likes blinding people with their ankles. And bam! You've got all the Jakes out there looking like fashion-savvy traffic cones.
Nice.
Brighten up your store's marketing. Smart Target from Shaw Business.
The following interview was recorded for CFRO The Pulse, Vancouver Co-op Radio's daily news show. The Pulse airs Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. on 100.5 FM and streaming live at coopradio.org.
You're listening to CFRO The Pulse, your independent daily news show here on Vancouver Co-op Radio 100.5 FM. It's Tan Macy. And today, we chat with Councillor Michael Weeb about the city's 2021 budget. This is the third chat we've had with councillors. You can check out our stream for interviews with councillors Lisa Dominato and Christine Boyle. Michael and I chat about the budget, equity, and the Vancouver Police Department.
Councillor Michael Weeb, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Okay, Michael, let's talk about the 2021 budget.
Housing affordability has always been a conversation, so how we deal with affordable housing has been a big key of our budget. Obviously, the conversation about the police has been top of mind as well. So what that looks like and how we're dealing with mental health, because that's one of the biggest crises we have, is and we're seeing it on a daily basis and all around Vancouver now, is people really severely dealing with wellness, and we as a city need to figure out ways to deal with it. And I know that some people talk about how there's different ministries and different levels of government that need to be dealing with this work, but I think collectively we recognize as a council that these are the residents of Vancouver, and we need to do whatever we can to ensure that we are increasing their well-being, which is one of the reasons why in the last budget process I asked for us to do a well-being process, which is copying the work that's being done in cities around the world, as including it kind of was led by New Zealand. And New Zealand did the first well-being budget, which is kind of changing what the outcomes are that we're looking for, and changing the way we kind of look at how we budget to ensure that every time we're making a budget decision, it's for the well-being of the residents of Vancouver and not just looking for financial or growth or different metrics, but we're really trying to recognize that we need to be spending our money in ways that improve the well-being of all citizens in Vancouver, not just a few.
So with the idea of a well-being budget, the largest line item that we look at in a budget is the 21%, the big whopping 21% that goes towards the Vancouver Police Department. And I know that with the Police Act, it means that City Council doesn't have direct influence over how much money goes to the VPD. Can you speak a bit about what influence you see city councillors and mayor having on that police budget and your thoughts on how to, on where you would go from there?
Yeah, I mean, I think for the first time ever, real open dialogue is happening between the police union, the police board, and city council, as well as just in the public and just getting an understanding of how come our police budget has continued to increase the levels it has. However, when you look at the metrics, we're not actually delivering on what we need. We're having more calls. We're having more issues. And so why are we continuing to increase and yet not seeing the results? And so I think that's one thing where we're seeing people feel less safe than they have in the past, and yet we're spending more of our budget on that. And so we, and I think our police department, if you've looked at over the last 10, 15 years, has created some really interesting reports talking about how we need to deal with mental health and how we need to integrate a lot of that work into the system. And I think this will be the time when we have to look at systems changes. And I think it's not just with the police, but also how we deal with suicide calls, right? I mean, we've seen an increase in suicide. So who goes to the call? What is the follow-up? How does it work? Like our mental health vehicle, we have one car that's going out. But over the last year, we've heard that there's been a lot of issues with that program. And so for me, I think the police budget is going to be a big one. And it's not about let's defund and not have police. The goal is are we spending the money on the resources we need to get the outcomes, which is improvement in safety and health and well-being? And so for me, that is, if we're having someone that's having a breakdown, is 911 the call, or can we look at other options? Like, is there an 811 that you call and you have a mental health team that goes out and responds and deals with it? And if they need to call the police can come and back them up, and we can ensure that wellness checks are being done in a way that work. And that's something that's come up to our board, is are we going to vote to no longer have police checks? And are we looking at who does wellness checks? And are we looking at what services are missing? And I think it's a discussion that's great that we're all having it. I think the social justice discussion is really important as well. And we're seeing a lot more of conversations on the inequity of who's being affected by our current system, who's being checked, who's being stopped, who doesn't feel comfortable. And it's showing up in every dialogue we have in Vancouver. So one of the dialogues we had on having because of COVID was, are we going to allow for public drinking in certain open spaces?
Michael, I'm going to pause you here for a second. And I want, I want to understand how what you said about what you said above actually translates specifically to the dollar amount. So Vancouver Police Department, 20%, 21% of the city's $1.6 billion operating budget. So what does that mean? Are city councillors like yourself, and do you see as a priority to reduce the amount allocated to the VPD and move it to other services? As you were talking about mental health services or other services that address the reasons why the calls are being made. What do you see as your priority for reducing, if you see as a priority, and what mechanisms do you have to do that?
Yeah, so mechanisms we're using right now is, obviously we're getting a report because we've asked what are the services that can be better served by serving organizations. So what ground level supports are needed, what health supports are needed. And we're also having to work with the ministry, because a lot of this is through the province. So they deal with mental health and addiction. And when we're looking at safety and security, we need to ensure that it's a collaborative approach. That's not just us cutting one component and not supporting another. And it might not be the city of Vancouver supporting another component of it. So I think that's where this has been stuck over the last years, is that it needs to be a collaborative approach. We need to ensure that funding is going in the right places that are improving the well-being of the citizens. And that's why I think changing the outlook of our whole budget to being a well-being budget creates more of a circular feedback loop. And when you look at some of the modeling, it allows for us to really say, why are we increasing funding in this component of the police? How is this actually going to help? And I think that's what we haven't done in the past. I think the province is on board to start to have the discussions. They are doing a review. And I think that of the police across the province, and I think that's important. I think we also need to look at ambulance and fire and how we best use our first responding funding to ensure that we are making sure that we're safe and secure. And I think that we will see a shift in funding. What that dollar amount looks like, I can't say at this moment, because we really need to get the data. And that's something we continue to ask for, is we need to know exactly what's being spent on what, and then look at what is that outcome we want, and where can we make those shifts, and what organizations are best suited to make, to use that money in a way that will be more proactive and be more influential for us as a society.
Thanks, Michael. And I'm going to keep asking this point, because this is something I see come up again and again in the downtown east side and from service providers there, which is, and to probably like a, let's start this like a yes or no answer. Do you support having that 21% goal to the VPD? Yes and no. Yes or no?
Do I support the 21? I support that we spend money in ways that increase the well-being. And currently I think that better money could be better spent with other organizations. So yes, I agree that some of that funding should be move to organizations that support mental health. And I think there's a lot of people on our police force that agree with that. And I think some of the reports kind of show that the police has recognized that there is a gap that they're covering. And we need to get the ministries involved to help close those gaps, so that we can ensure that we're not having the same repeat people that are not getting the services they need. And when you look at spaces like, I was in Strathcona Park. When you talk to the residents, I mean, we have a lot of trauma in our city. And if we don't have trauma-based services, and we don't have the right training for people to really deal with those issues, it's going to continue to happen. And I think that's why we need systemic change to deal with what's happening. And I think the police is a good start. I think there's a lot of work to be done in shifting some of that funding to organizations that can better suit with the issues. And I know that there's police officers that completely agree that they're going to some calls that they should not be going to, but who else is going to them? And I think that's what we need to ask. The question is, when we make the shift, who's going to be dealing with that work? And how is that going to be monitored? And how is it going to be dealt with? And I think the justice system as well, when you talk to a lot of the police officers, and I did my ride along, currently there's a lot of changes that could be done at the justice system that would help support the current work of the police department to be more effective in ensuring public safety. And I think we need to look at the whole justice system to support what the public really needs and wants. And so including the correctional system and others. So I think this question of defund the police has really helped spark really difficult conversations that, yes, we're not funding appropriately, and I think that we're not getting the outcomes we need. So moving some of the funding over to organizations that better suited to deal with it, 100%. Two, we need to revamp the justice system, and we're seeing that more and more, where we need to recognize what is working in the justice system and who's the justice system working for. That needs to change. And then we need to work better collaboratively between different levels of government, because right now there's such a disconnect when ambulance can do one thing that is paid for by the province, and yet we have medical fire trucks that can do one thing. Some can enter buildings, some can't. And so 911 calls are being shifted to not deal with this and deal with that. And until we have a full review and get it done right, we're going to continue to spend money in ways that aren't dealing with the and creating more inequity and creating huge issues. I mean, our city's struggling right now with a lot of issues, and it's open, and it's the disorder is difficult for everyone now. And I think that's what's changed this dialogue, is that we're seeing big incidents happen all around the world. And then when you look in our backyard, you can see it on a daily basis, no matter what neighborhood you live in, that there are people that are dealing with different issues that need to be dealt with in a different way. And let's do systems change. And that is looking at revamping the police, revamping ambulance, looking at the justice system, looking at how municipal governments are funded.
I'm going to ask you a specific question about that came out of the staff report prepared, I believe, in June. I looked at the assumptions made by city staff about how much revenue the city would have in the upcoming year, and city staff were clear that we don't really know. We don't really know because there's so much uncertainty in the world. But the assumption that's currently being made is that that city revenues are going to be go back to normal by January 2021, and then rise by 2% a year between 2021 to 2025. Correct me if I'm wrong on any of that. But when I look at those assumptions, those sound pretty optimistic to me. And the reason why I'm bringing it up here, because that with that optimism, if things go south with a COVID 2.0 or whatever happens to us, that doesn't give us a lot of buffer room. What are your thoughts on that?
Our numbers or revenues are actually higher than we predicted. So our staff were expected us to actually take longer to have a rebound in some of our revenue streams that have come in for this year. And so I think moving forward, I think it's going to be really interesting to see, because there will be a change where we are seeing an increase in revenue in some fields and a decrease in others. And I think kind of over this summer, we're going to have a lot more feedback that's going to be inputted in this budget, which I think will be more helpful, because we're getting, every day we learn, right? Every day we're seeing what's happening. We're looking at different countries and cities. And I think what COVID has done is it's increased the communication channels between elected officials around the world, around government workers, to ensure that we're so much more data driven and we're being more open with what are the needs and what are the revenues than I think was happening in the past. So I think when we get our staff report in September, there'll be an update on what those numbers look like. And I think we're going to have a probably different outlook on what are revenues and what will be the costs projections of the next few years, because we'll have a better understanding of where we're at with COVID, because it's such a moving target. And some departments were surprised that they got revenues going up, and others are surprised at how little it came back. So, yeah, I think that right now those are the numbers that were put forward in front of us. But I think in September we'll see much different numbers.
Another aspect of this budget planning process, I'm curious about, Michael, is around the equity aspect. I'm just curious to hear what you think about level of knowledge you personally have and City Council as a whole has, understanding the urban indigenous community here and what their needs are.
Our council has continued to push the equity lens and trying to ensure that we are reaching out to a new group of people and getting more people involved in this process. And AFTAB, who actually was the chair of the two-spirited transgender variant committee that I sat on at Park Board, is now been hired as our equity manager or director for the City of Vancouver, recognizing that we have huge opportunity here to increase the way we can do our consultation to get more people involved and hear more voices in the budget than we've ever done in the past. And I think that that's something that our council continues to push, is how many languages, how are we getting to the centers, how are we getting to people that don't normally get involved in this process, how are renters being heard in this. And I think Urban Indigenous Committee, I sat on it from 2014 to 2018, and I think we heard a lot of amazing conversations about how do we include that community and how do we make them feel connected, because currently there's such a disconnect between a lot of the members of that community and civic governance. And so there were some good ideas brought forward that I know our staff are working on and implementing and getting out there. I think we've been building stronger and stronger relations with our three host nations. I think that Tsleil-Waututh, Musqueam, and Squamish, the counselors are starting to speak to each other. We have our yearly meetings, but I think more than that, I think dialogue is really happening between us. So I have tons of times where a counselor from one of the nations will reach out on a topic, and I think that that's something we didn't see in the past. And so we're learning how to better hear from different organizations and different groups. I also think we have a council that has a mixture of ages and backgrounds. And so when you have 40 years of difference between the youngest and oldest counselor, it really makes a difference in really understanding different communities, because I think a lot of times we bring very different backgrounds. I know that as a council, we're predominantly white, and it is something that has been talked about a lot, is how are we listening to voices when we don't reflect in our skin color Vancouver. And that's something we do need to look at in the next election, is why is most of the council a certain race? However, we do have 8 women, and that's been brought up, that we do have a lens that we haven't seen in the past. So for me, we are listening to more voices, because I think each one of us is very connected in a different way, and we're making sure that those voices are heard. I think our advisory committees are really being heard and listened to, because a lot of us are young counselors that are really listening as much as we possibly can, or getting out there. I think this is a really good council of people that care. And so we have a lot of dialogue, and there's a lot of meetings happening in the community at all time. And I run into counselors at almost all of them. And I think we are trying to get out there. Our staff are doing a great job and trying to get more voices into these conversations. And I think using technology is hopefully a way that we can expand that as well. But I think face-to-face and getting out in the community is one of the struggles we will have in this budget, is that because we can't get out there and do town halls like we used to, or be at community events and have a booth up for budget at Vasaki and at different parades or at different events, that is going to hurt some of the public consultation that we can do. Because I think being in the community and being where people are at is something that's really critical. And currently, a lot of those have been canceled. And so I think that will be something that, yes, we'll be reaching a lot more people using digital means and events and having more ability that way. But we are going to miss that face-to-face contact where people can ask questions. And I think that's something that our staff are looking at, how we can best find small working groups or different ways to really kind of make those changes and use all the amazing organizations we have in Vancouver. We're very fortunate as a city. I mean, there's meetings happening every minute of every day between amazing organizations, right? Radio stations like yourself, nonprofits. I just was on a couple food security conversations today, and just – the organizations and what they're doing and the support they're getting is, it gives me a lot of hope in where Vancouver could go.
Thanks, Michael. It's a long process and many conversations. And my last question for you, Michael, is on the note of this, of what happens when COVID 2.0 hits, and it's about supporting the many community organizations you're talking about. And everyone knows the city has limited resources. The city is not a province, and the feds, and there's a strong understanding of that. And there's a strong understanding when I talk to people, to different organizations, that the city has been doing a lot, and also concern of what happens when COVID 2.0 hits. I hear that when COVID 1.0 hit and operational funds, when organizations were looking to donors for operational funds, donors were really good to step up. But when when COVID 2.0, the second wave of COVID hits, we anticipate donor fatigue, and everyone knows that the city has limited resources. But I'm curious what you think about that. Where nonprofits can turn when the second wave of COVID hits? Is it to the city? Is it to someone else? Is there room in the budget to allow for a buffer around that? What are your thoughts?
Obviously today in the conversations with food security, those were happening. So what were the learnings that we learned in the first phase, right? Like in COVID 1.0 or whatever you want to call it, what did we learn? What were the gaps? What are the needs? How do we best make sure that the resources are getting out there? How do we ensure that we have the volunteer fatigue is another one. We're talking about some of these organizations have a lot of volunteer fatigue because they were dealing with 100 hampers a week and now they're doing 700. And right, they only have a certain base. Some people don't feel comfortable during COVID to be a volunteer anymore. So they've actually decreased the amount of volunteers you have. And so I think we have to recognize what worked and didn't work, what organizations helped lead, who are the leaders we have. We're very fortunate in the city to have some really strong people that are involved that have been doing this. Like Naveed from Potluck Catering has done disaster relief work for food security around the world in different places. And so I think we had really amazing people that kind of helped us through this. Daryl, our fire chief, had done a lot of big events around the world and put in really good procedures now that if we do have a 2.0, we can kind of enact and we're ready to go on a lot of things that took us a long time last time. So I think our response will be quicker, it'll be more effective. I think we have identified the gaps and resources needed. And I think funding-wise, we recognize that there's a lot of times that the funding needed to be right away and it needed to be immediate because it needed to change. And so I think we've recognized where we need to put immediate funding, what that looks like, how do we transfer that fund from one area of the city to another to ensure that an organization can deliver on one of the needs for COVID response. And also ensuring that we have the federal and provincial support and knowing what worked and didn't work. So I think we're much better situated for another pandemic. Pandemic response is not something that was in any of our emergency handbooks, right? Like we have stuff for earthquakes and we have a lot of stuff that was for short-term response. So most of our recovery and EOC and all of that was to deal with an earthquake, flood, something that was going to be a disaster that was immediate, and then your recovery over a few months. And so this is a pandemic response is very different the way it's handled. And I think we learned a lot in this first phase. And I think a lot of amazing people stepped up. And so I'm confident that the city of Vancouver is in a really good position moving forward with the people we have in place and all the organizations and volunteers. And I just hope that if we do have a second one, we continue to have a positive group of people pushing to support. And if people can, please volunteer. We need your support in any way possible. If you do have extra funding available that you can help support some of these organizations, please find a local organization to give and support and do what you can. And sometimes it's not money or volunteer time. Sometimes it's supplies, sometimes it's space, sometimes it's a fridge. And so I think if we continue to build those connections, I think we're going to be in a good place. And let's hope for the best. Let's hope that people continue to do follow provincial health guidelines so that we can ensure that we minimize this next wave.
I appreciate the optimism, Michael. And thank you so much for your time today. Wish I could keep you for longer, but I probably can't, so I'll let you go. And I really appreciate the time, and I look forward to hearing more as the budget planning process keeps going.
Yeah, I guess one last thing. I think that one of the elements, we talked about the well-being, which is important to the budget, but the other one is we're trying to look at how we decolonize our processes. And I think we have to look at the budget process is one of those, is how do we ensure that we're putting not just a lens, but we actually look at how what it looks like to decolonize the budget to ensure that there is equity and social justice in everything we do at the City of Vancouver. And so that will be something that this council continues to push forward. And we look forward to seeing how staff respond and how they make sure that we deliver on this, because I know they've been supportive on it since day one. And they've been working hard to ensure that equity is a big part of this next budget.
Our listeners will be keen on hearing that. So we'll be keeping on it. Hey, Michael, thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Bye.
And you're listening to The Pulse on CFRO. It's your independent daily news show here on Vancouver Co-op Radio 100.5 FM. I'm Tan Macy. You can find our episodes, including our previous interviews with city councillors, wherever you find your favorite podcasts. Just search for The Pulse on CFRO.
CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.
It's 2020. What's next for the economy? Is the digital revolution, the one that's changing everything around us, actually good for us? And who are the innovators reshaping the country and the world? These are some of the topics I've been privileged to cover as one of Canada's leading journalists. Now I get to continue the conversation with the RBC Disruptors podcast. I'm John Stackhouse. Join me as we explore how the future is being reimagined right now. Subscribe to RBC Disruptors and download today.
Smart Target from Shaw Business helps you launch personalized marketing campaigns so you can keep your customers coming back for more. Like Jake here.
Hi.
Let's say Jake likes colorful socks.
I do.
And you just got some excessively neon numbers in stock. So, Smart Target sends an offer to Jake.
Ooh.
And anyone else who likes blinding people with their ankles. And bam! You've got all the Jakes out there looking like fashion-savvy traffic cones.
Nice.
Brighten up your store's marketing. Smart Target from Shaw Business.